This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices Hot Topics episode number 3 was recorded on September 16th, 2019. The backstory for today's hot topic. Back on September 5th, we had a fantastic interview on our Thursday night podcast with Grant Williams, where, among other things, I lamented about the fact that I had been wrong thinking that the US dollar was going to appreciate, and I got that call right. I thought it would be a headwind for gold, and needless to say, the market has proven me wrong. When Alex Gurevich, our friend the hedge fund manager from San Francisco, heard that interview with Grant Williams, he started tweeting, "I've got something to say on the topic." So without further ado, let's go right to Alex Gurevich. Alex, let's dive right in. When I discussed this with Grant, I had a view on gold that was proven wrong. What was I missing?
Okay, good to be back here. First and foremost, I want to say that, of course, if you anyone listening to this should be have first listened to the excellent interview with Grant Williams. And the whole reason is because it was good, it engaged my thinking on many areas. But one area what I would like to zoom in is the conversation regarding the correlation between gold and dollar. There is this, and let me for a second sound a little bit arrogant and didactic. I would call it an urban legend. There are several urban legends in the market. And one of the urban legends going on in the market is that dollar and gold are negatively correlated, or that the fact that dollar would be strong would be headwind for gold. What I want to explain that it may or may not be true. And even thinking in that way, at least in my opinion, is fallacious to begin with. And the reason is this. There is a fundamental difference between two different things. There is a physical asset of gold, a gold bar you hold in your hand, or, for example, a euro bill, 100 euro bill you hold in your hand, and the exchange rate between gold and dollar and euro and dollar. The exchange rate, when you look at gold in terms of dollars, which is what you trade on the exchange, that is, of course, correlated to dollar, but it's correlated to dollar, and I, excuse me for the mathematical term, tautologically. It's a tautological correlation. That is, correlation that carries in itself no information. So let me try to explain it to the listeners. If I told you for a second, let's look at two securities, euro and soybeans. I think you will find that there is very little correlation between euro and soybeans. But what if I told you that euro and soybeans had 0.96 correlation, so almost one correlation on daily price moves for the last year and a half? What would you say?
I don't know. But knowing you, Alex, I think it's a trick question. What's the punchline?
It is a trick question because I expressed both euro and soybeans in Bitcoin. And if you express both euro and soybeans in terms of the price of Bitcoin, the correlation is almost one because Bitcoin is so volatile. Whatever your price in terms of Bitcoin will be correlated. So whenever dollar is the moving asset, whenever it's all about dollar, then everything that is expressed in terms of dollar will be correlated. So it will appear that euro and Mexican peso and Argentinian peso and rand and Turkish lira and yen and Aussie dollar and gold, they will all those different currencies, which have very different dynamics, they will all appear correlated because it's a dollar that is moving. So, but that actually tells us nothing about true correlation between those currencies. It's all about dollar. Another mathematical way of thinking is about this. Think about a ratio, A divided by B. And then you look at C divided by B, where A in one case is gold and another case is euro, and C is euro, and B, what you divide by, is dollar. So both of those things obviously will go down as dollar goes up. But it tells us nothing about how A gold and C euro are truly correlated. So to search for correlation, for that correlation is intrinsically fallacious. It might be that there might be a correlation there, but what I believe it is, which is based on market regimes. And to illustrate it further, I gave you an example of euro and soybeans expressed in terms of Bitcoin. They move together. But what if you expressed another cryptocurrency, Ethereum, in terms of Bitcoin? And I will then, while euro and soybeans had almost correlation one in terms of Bitcoin, they will have zero correlation to the ratio between Ethereum and Bitcoin, because Ethereum has a dynamics which is closely linked to Bitcoin. So when Bitcoin goes up, Ethereum goes up, and sometimes even more. So when we're in a dynamics where gold and dollar are closely linked currency, when the regime, when we're having a liquidity regime switch, which causes flights to both dollar and gold, gold expressed in terms of dollars is no longer correlated to euro or soybeans or anything else expressed in terms of dollars. It becomes about the joint dynamics of dollar and gold, which is actually similarly happens when we start easing cycle. So when we're now at a kind of a tight liquidity regime switch cycle, gold and dollar become related safety havens, just as Ethereum is related to Bitcoin. So to say that gold should go down because dollar is going up is as fallacious, and I apologize for using this word. It sounds a little arrogant. It's just like a logical term, but it's as fallacious as to say that Ethereum should go down because Bitcoin is going up. Even if you are in a Bitcoin-centered universe, you will still probably not think that I should be short Ethereum because I'm bullish on Bitcoin. If anything, you would probably be saying I should buy more Ethereum because I'm bullish on Bitcoin, right? So that's the same problem. It's a purely logical problem, because if you just run your correlations and look like, oh yeah, gold divided by dollar is correlated to euro divided by dollar, you will probably get positive correlation. But this correlation is tautological, or in other words, meaningless, because it all comes from the denominator. This is the correlation you get in the long run, and in the short run, the numerator, which is in this case is gold, might completely take over the whole relation. Does this make sense so far?
Yes, Alex, that makes perfect sense, but let's translate this to how you actually trade it. What would your positioning be, and how would you deal with this view that, hey, it looks like the U.S. dollar is going to appreciate, at least the common wisdom, even if it is an urban legend as you describe it, is that that should have been a headwind for gold. Obviously, it wasn't. So what positioning would you have advised?
Well, Eric, I would once again encourage the listeners to listen very carefully to the interview with Grant Williams that I was referring to. And I actually think that all the positioning information can be taken out from there, because I actually happen to agree with most points made during this discussion. So the point, if we really work through that, is that we do like the dollar, and I agree with the long-term or medium-term, I would say, bullish dollar view. And the concept of I'm sympathetic to the concept of dollar liquidity squeeze. But when you say like the dollar, it means like the dollar against other currencies. So let's just, for very simple, simplistic approach, say long dollar versus euro. Euro is not my favorite short, but euro is just the best proxy for long dollar. So the thrust of this interview, you want to be long dollar versus euro, or long dollar versus Swiss franc, or pick your currency, or Aussie dollar. And the other thrust of this discussion is that gold is a long-term really good asset. And by the way, my strategic system requires me to be long any asset that I consider to be good long-term investment, regardless of any short-term view I have on the asset. My system does not permit me not to be long gold, regardless of what I think is the current headwind is. So I have to be long gold. But the only way I can be not long gold if I put a stop buy on it. For example, if I thought that some asset is overextended and I think it might pull back, I would put a stop buy so I would not miss their big trend.
Let me interrupt and ask a quick question, Alex, because one of the views that I've held very much in alignment with yours is you really want to be long gold here. And I've thought, okay, it's to get in at this point or to add at this point is really hard to justify because it's moved so quickly. so much so far in such a short time period, it feels like we're overdue for a pullback. Now, I felt like long dollar and long gold at the same time was a good hedge, so that if gold were to correct, it seemed unlikely to me that the dollar would correct to the downside at the same time. Is that an effective hedge? And if not, what would be an effective hedge if you want to be long or adding to a gold position here at these lofty levels and you want some kind of hedge?
I would be a little concerned about this as a hedge in the short, like a daily hedge, because on a daily basis, as we've actually seen over the last few days, we would have severe corrections in both bonds and gold without even having dollar do very much. And I think that's how it's expected to be in the cycle. It's the same thing as you're not going to hedge. You're not necessarily going to be hedging long Ethereum by also being long Bitcoin. They both can go down on the same day, because those are when there is a risk on. I think the hedge actually to being long dollar and long gold is to be long some risk assets. If you have your favorite stocks, if you have your favorite investments, especially investments abroad, and something like investments in emerging markets or whatever, the good hedge to that is it's almost like the investment, the actual core investment is the hedge. It's the long dollar and the long gold are the hedge to your risky investments, or conversely, risky investments are the hedge to your long bonds, long dollar, and long gold view. I think those positions complement any risk in your portfolio very much. So how I would design the portfolio. I would have still my favorite stocks, real estate, or venture capital investment, whatever is what you do. And on the other side, I would have those trades which work well when there is various liquidity squeezes, which are typically negative for your risky investments. But on the side of thinking about relation between those two trades specifically, if you summarize basically view, I think you're correct. You express the view that you're long, want to be long dollar, and you want to be long gold. And those both views were expressed on the interview. But to put them together, I would just not even think about being long gold in terms of that ratio, that arithmetic ratio I talk about, gold in terms of dollar. Why not just think of it as I'm long gold in terms of euro? Don't even think about dollar gold. Think about euro gold. You want to be long in gold versus euro versus Australian dollar. For example, gold versus Australian dollar are highly correlated because Australia is a gold producer, right? And Australian interest rates are falling. Gold already has positive real carry versus currencies like euro, which has severely negative real interest rates. And gold has only small negative interest rates, which is the cost of storage, right? So it will also move to have positive, probably to have positive real carry against Australian dollar. So if that is your view, I think that's where the confusion comes. You think that dollar is headwinds for gold or gold headwinds for dollar, while those are not even what you should be looking at, in my opinion. I think you should just say, gold is an asset I want to be long. Say, Australian dollar is an asset I want to be short. So I'm going to be long gold and short Australian dollar. And as a completely separate independent trade, you can say, I want to be long dollar and short euro. And by the way, I'm not really strongly advocating this trade right now. I'm just saying this is, to me, the manifestation of the views summarized in the interview you presented. And I think the idea that actually stock gold could be used as a hedge to your overall portfolio also was presented, I think, in this discussion. So I'm not even introducing anything new.
Okay, so you like both trades, long gold and long US dollar index, but you don't see the dollar index necessarily as a hedge against a pullback in the price of gold. Now, you just mentioned real estate. Obviously, as we get into the economic environment, the macro backdrop that a lot of us are expecting, that Grant and I discussed in that interview, real estate is a hard asset. It's an excellent thing to be in. But at the same time, it seems to me that residential real estate has been the benefactor of a lot of easy lending practices. And I worry that a lot of people are overextended. And although I don't think we have the same setup for a housing crisis because we don't have the mortgage-backed securities at the center of the financial problem the way they were last time, I still think there's some risk of a pretty significant pullback in residential real estate prices as we get into the next recession. Would you agree with that view? Because, of course, the opposing view is, hey, we're headed toward an environment of negative rates. That's got to be good for hard assets.
Unfortunately, I have to say both. I both appreciative of the idea that we might head for a correction on any assets. It would be crazy to think that we may not have correction, say, on equities. We could very easily have a correction and even a bear market on equities, and next year or two, it would be very consistent with historical pattern of events. Severe correction in real estate, I think, is slightly more in question, because we didn't necessarily have severe corrections in real estate in all previous recessions or equity bear markets. The great financial crisis was kind of a little bit of an outlier in terms of the magnitude of real estate correction. But also, having seen that happen, it's hard for me to say, like, no, don't worry, just load up on your real estate leverage. I think you have to be careful and pick and choose on real estate. However, since my core view is that interest rates are going closer to zero in the U.S., I don't know if they're going to go negative, but I'm definitely think that they will go down. That will probably provide some support, but I will be caution people against thinking that this support will be indefinite. Like, it will not provide infinite support. If real estate needs to correct, it needs to correct. If people cannot pay rent, if rentals cannot pay rent, if people cannot pay the existing mortgages, I mean, even if rates are zero, you still have to pay down. You still have to pay some rent, and you still have to pay down the principal. And if you cannot do that, problems will arise.
Let's go ahead and move on now. What else stood out for you in that interview with Grant Williams that you'd like to comment on?
Well, another thing that, in my opinion, is somewhat related to, not related in terms of being exactly the same situation, but related as an intellectual exercise of a similar kind. There was a bit of a discussion of yield curves and their predictive power with relation to potential future recession. And I've been, for a very long time, talking about this subject. I'm definitely a bond bull. I do think rates will eventually go to zero. We had a pullback. I'm trying to navigate it the best I can. I wish I could tell you I got it all right. The interesting thing is I tweeted on September 2nd, there was a discussion about bonds, and I actually said that on September 2nd, there is a tweet that a lot of people reacted to, and I said, my ranking of the long bond trade, so my ranking of being long-dated bonds, right, is the lowest it has been at any point in the last 6 years. So there was never, I was never less bullish on long bonds than on September 2nd. But I think some people took it as meaning that I was necessarily short fixed income market, but I was not. I was still long the front end. I just wasn't long the long end. So I tried to navigate the best I could this pullback, and I'm definitely was in the process of adding up to Friday afternoon, up to 2 p.m. on Friday afternoon, and we still have to see how this pullback will play out. I'm still prepared for it to be getting worse, because 40 basis point correction is not necessarily that big a correction relative to some past corrections. Even in the middle of an easing cycle, we've had in the past corrections even more vicious, and we did have 180 basis point rally on the 10-year note, so 40 basis point correction is not that out of control. But so I'm still in the same camp. My views did not change, but I want to caution against the secularity of logic. I've tweeted about this before, and I've even written a post about this quite a while ago. You cannot say things like the Fed will cut rates. I was like, why the Fed will cut rates? Because recession is coming. Oh, okay, good. How do you know the recession is coming? Well, the recession is coming because the yield curve is inverted. And I would say, like, well, why the yield curve is inverted? Oh, the yield curve is inverted because the Fed is projected to cut rates. So you cannot really think of projection of Fed cutting rates as a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think some people think of it, but it's actually not, in my opinion, because in fact, interest rates have negative predictive power. In a sense, when projected interest rates go down, it's more likely that they'll be higher. If projected interest rates are higher, it's more likely that they will be lower. So whatever futures several years out do, actually the opposite becomes incrementally more likely to happen. It's a little bit of a difficult concept. I discuss a little bit in my book, but you cannot think of interest rates necessarily being a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think that the problem with the logic that you've discussed, that we can just rely on the yield curve inversion, and by the way, very randomly picked yield curve inversion, be that like 3 months LIBOR versus 10-year notes, 2 years versus 10-year yields. I've been pointing out that actually inversion happened more than a year ago in the parts of the curve where it mattered, the euro dollar futures. 2-3 years out, they inverted, and they've been inverted for a very long time now. But even if you saw that that was an indicator, I would caution about this in terms of whether it carries any new information. And people all bring it to me and say, like, well, look at the 9 past recessions. They're all perfectly predicted by yield curve inversion. And the example I gave in one of my old posts is I said, suppose you're falling out of a 20-story building and you just flew by the 10th floor. It is a perfect predictor that you're going to hit the ground in a few seconds. But is it really useful? So think it through. Is it really useful to know that you are falling through the 10th floor? You already fell off the building. You already know you're going to hit the ground. But you're hitting the ground will be invariably preceded by you flying past 10th floor, 9th floor, 8th floor. So we have a certain pattern of how cycles develop. So we have rates go up during hiking cycles, liquidity tightens, unemployment falls. And when unemployment falls, the growth potential falls because once you have nobody else to hire, how are you going to grow, right? Fed responds to raising wages by taking out liquidity. That eventually leads to inversion because the possibility of recession, possibility of economic slowdown and deflationary shocks becomes more and more imminent. And incorrectly predicting this yield curve starts to invert, though it never inverts enough, by the way. The yield curve is always underpredicts the future easing. It's always under-inverted. It's never really over-inverted. There's been very few instances of over-inversion. I think there was a brief inversion in 2016, but it was really not sustained, and that was the one like wrong inversion. But almost always it's under-inversion. But this inversion already carries the information that we already have, and it's a result of things that already happened that we already can see. So I actually don't think that there is any value to predictive models based on yield curve shape. And that's another thing I wanted to comment that you've been discussing on this interview.
Alex, I can't thank you enough, both for being a very loyal, regular listener of Macro Voices, as well as joining us today to add your own thoughts to my interview with Grant Williams. We really hope to get you back, maybe for a future interview at some point in the future. But in the meantime, give our listeners a quick rundown of what you do there at Hante Investments and how they can follow your work if they're interested in learning more about what you do.
Yes, Eric, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure to talk to you and be on your podcast. So my company is called Hante Investments, and you could find all the information you need on the website, www.honteinv.com, honteinv.com. It is only for accredited investors, but we have programs both for individual and institutional investors, as well as there is public access to some of my recent snippets of some of my recent interviews and also some of my recent blog posts that I've made publicly accessible. And everybody, thank you for listening.
Well, we look forward to having you back soon. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.